south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, would-be visitors and tourists to Latin America, in fact, anywhere in the third world, are always worried about natural disasters, volcanoes, earthquakes. Well, Latin America is just dotted with volcanoes. A lot of active ones, too. I've mentioned them on past shows, and I've said many times, as long as you're 5 or 10 miles away from an active volcano, you really do have yourself a million-dollar view that's ever-changing. Or I should say billion-dollar view, because, well, a million's not what it used to be, right? And bad storms and hurricanes, well, you know, during the rainy season, you get some bad storms. But hurricanes, you're only affected if you're actually on the coast. And by the way, hurricanes almost never hit South America, not with any great force. And the Caribbean side of Latin America seems to get hit a lot harder with hurricanes than the Pacific side. So if you like the coast and live there, have a beach house, whatever, you have to be prepared every couple of years to weather a hurricane. I can speak with some authority on hurricanes because I had a Caribbean house completely wiped off the map by one. Now, that was a long time ago before I got to Latin America. It was on a British island. But on the Latin American beachfront, well, I sat through 2 pretty good-sized hurricanes. Not anyone's idea of a good time or a nice vacation. In fact, it sounded like a freight train for about 2 days. But the good thing is, you can prepare because you know when they're coming. You get at least a week's notice from the weatherman. And though Latins with beach houses often suffer a lot of damage, they almost never take the proper precautions or prepare. In fact, if I heard this refrain once, I've heard it 10,000 times. In Latin America, if something bad's happening or is going to happen, the locals will just shrug and look up into the sky and say, "Es en los manos de Dios." It's in God's hands. Yeah, right. As you might imagine, gringos with beach houses or houses near the coast always seem to be better prepared and their houses suffer the least. Why? Because they don't look up at the sky and say, "Es en los manos de Dios." We generally don't sit on our dead asses waiting for things to happen. Gringos and expats, they're prepared. They build things on a high spot. They have breakwaters. They have water purifiers and flashlights with charged up batteries. They have a portable generator and fuel for the generator. They even start it up once in a while. Details, details. That's one of the great traits us gringos and expats have. Even if you're a gringo who thinks you've got kind of a lazy and shiftless personality, whether you realize it or not, well, compared to the average laid-back, mañana-time Latin guy, it's as if, well, he's Gilligan and you're the professor. Now, speaking of natural disasters, just this last week, there was a 6.6, or was it a 6.9, earthquake on the border of Mexico and Guatemala. I don't know if you heard about it up north, but it was all over the news down here, like every earthquake is. As usual, a couple of people died. Houses teetered, crumbled, and fell down. But get this, not houses built to anti-seismic code. And you know, every house and building constructed after 1975 will withstand, or is supposed to withstand, an earthquake of 7.6. That's massive. That would include any houses or buildings designed by an architect with the setup blueprints approved by a local municipality. Now remember, much of the housing in Latin America was put up by squatters. You know, that's what you see when you drive through some of the slums and scummy areas in medium and large Latin cities. Yep, it's the poor and the lower middle class housing that's at risk. That's the stuff that collapses or gets flooded out during natural disasters. That's because poor squatters build and expand on the worst kind of land. So when you see a Latin American earthquake event on TV, and you see the houses tumbling down and a bunch of dazed and confused people standing in the street looking at the chaos and the mess, if you take a closer look, you'll see that 95% of the time, even more, those are the faces of the Latin lower middle class and poor, the people that don't have the money to build with rebar and concrete or follow anti-seismic construction rules at all. Anyway, that 6.6 or 6.9, whatever it was, that's a big one. Yet not a single first world person I know who lived nearby suffered a bit, except for a few rattling dishes and window panes and barking dogs. So if you live down here in Latin America, just like if you live in California, you got to expect the occasional earthquake, and a fairly big one will come about every couple years. And the really big ones, over 7.0, about every 25 years or so. I know, it doesn't sound good, but remember, your first world-style house in a nice neighborhood is built to take it. And believe me, the chances that the epicenter is going to be where you live, that's like 1 in 1,000. So for example, if you hear there's a 6.6 on the border of Guatemala and Mexico, if you're at the epicenter, you're really going to feel it. There'll be about 30 seconds of vibration where you won't know what the hell's happening. It won't take your house down, but you're going to feel it. However, if you're on the southern border of Guatemala, where it meets El Salvador, for example, a couple of 100 miles away from the epicenter, the shockwaves will be so weak you might not feel it at all. So should you be afraid of earthquakes? Well, you never really get used to them. In fact, when I feel one coming, I always tense up a bit, kind of look around for an escape route. As far as being on the safe side, as for me, I would not like to live in a high-rise building of over, let's say, 4 or 5 stories. I don't care if those buildings can take a big earthquake. You know, I'm not big on heights as it is, and once I was, I think, in an 8th-floor building and an earthquake came, and man, I was on the verge of cold sweats. And it's true, all the big high-rises are built to anti-seismic codes and such, but man, I just want to be somewhere else, closer to ground when an earthquake hits. But that's just me. By the way, after being down here 27 years now, I don't know anybody, gringo or local, who's ever been personally hurt, killed, or damaged during an earthquake. Sure, after a while, we've all got a few hairline cracks in our walls, but that's about it. All right, so moving on. People have been asking me about expat Eddie lately. Is he dead? Abducted by aliens, maybe? Is he in jail? Well, not quite. Now, people who know him well know he's colorblind. He has a hard time distinguishing green from red, so he could never pass the vision test up in the States when going for his driver's license. Yet he did manage to get a legal driver's license up there. How'd he do it? Well, he has a first cousin that looks quite like him, and he paid him to go down to the driver's station, pose as him, and take the vision test. That little subterfuge started quite early when Eddie was around 20. That was before the internet and cell phones, when life was a lot slower and things weren't interconnected. Back then in Texas, a license was for 10 years and no fingerprints were ever taken. All right, so flash forward to when Eddie ended up in Latin America, yeah? When his first world Texas license just wouldn't hold up anymore, got too old and moldy and torn and waterlogged, or I should say rum and tequila logged, he finally decided to go to the driver's license bureau in El Salvador and get a real Salvadorian license. Now, you know, back then, and even up till recently, you could hang around the government buildings in any city in Latin America. And inevitably, if you're hanging around the license bureau, some guy will walk up to you and say, hey, for a price, I can get you a genuine license in a half an hour without you ever having to stand in line or taking any tests. Nothing required except getting your picture taken and you're done. And the cost, generally $50 to $100. So over the years, I've known many a gringo expat who bought his driver's license lock, stock, and barrel from a guy on the street. And yep, they'd pass muster too because they were registered. Nope, not made in someone's basement either. Because you see, these guys are connected with the license bureau. Grease and palms and stuff, you know? When it comes to government, everyone's corrupt and they're all out to make a buck. Yep, they would even take you by the hand and lead you in to get a picture taken right in the official license bureau office. So yep, a lot of people were in on the scam. Anyway, in the past, a lot of gringos and Latins whose paperwork wasn't in order or they just wanted to get things done in a hurry would pay outright to get a driver's license. And Eddie did this for a while. Only now, with so much computerization and interconnection and fingerprints and even iris scans, I wouldn't recommend it. Which is why not so long ago, Eddie went down to the driver's license bureau to get a legit license. However, like I said, he's colorblind and he did not pass the vision test. However, as he predicted, his gringo advantage kicked right in and the lady who was administering the test helped him through it. Oh, he failed it all right, over and over, but she smiled and passed him anyway. Yep, that kind of stuff happens all the time when you're off the gringo tourist trail. So Eddie has a pretty good case of color blindness. That's why he dresses in oddly matched colors sometimes, though eclectic is in now, right? And the mismatched socks, well, that's a constant with him. And when I point it out, he'll say, hey, they fit fine. Now, the weird thing is Eddie's color blindness actually helps him in the sushi business. He says these days the majority of crab meat is fake, but they fake it so well, it fools the public nearly 100% of the time. But not Eddie. To him, the real red on the meat and the fake red come out as different shades of gray. By the way, he said, restaurants will lie to you and tell you the crab salad is real crab and it's not. Yep, leave it to the Japanese to make it look, feel, and have the same texture as real crab meat. And really, it's just processed cheap fish with textured soy protein added. Yum, yum. Actually, kind of sad, you know? And to think, all those millions of sushi eaters out there believe they're eating healthy and wholesome. And we haven't even mentioned Fukushima yet, have we? Kind of sad, you know? Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, how can expat Eddie drive a car in Latin America? It's crazy and chaotic enough for people who can actually tell a red light from a green light. He said, no problem. Stop lights everywhere are the same. Since the top of the signal light is always red and the bottom's always green and the light in between always yellow, the color doesn't matter to him. It just matters what light's on in what order. And as far as Latin America, he says, no problem either. The red's on top, and that means stop for everyone except motorcycles, taxis, and chicken bus drivers. The bottom light means green for go, and you go, and the middle light, yellow, when that's lit, that means step on it. By the way, Eddie says he's been in the doghouse all week with his fiancée, Claudia. Why? He did a most unspeakable thing. He forgot the Latin American birthday rules. You know, they have them down here. Latins take their birthdays very seriously, with Latin ladies especially obsessed with it. In fact, they feel it's almost a right to have the day off and celebrate all week. Now, of course, up in the States and in Europe, it's only a big thing if you're a kid or you slip into one of those real pivotal years like 18, 21, 50, maybe 62 if you're picking up Social Security. Otherwise, Americans, especially American women, don't want to be reminded that the years are ticking away. Here's something you didn't know, and it scares gringos. Oftentimes, at exactly 6 in the morning, you'll hear a string of firecrackers go off in the neighborhood. You're thinking, what the hell? 6 in the morning? Firecrackers? Are they nuts? Well, that's actually a Latin tradition. Of course, you know, the majority of Latin Americans get up well before 6 in the morning because they got to take a chicken bus to work, which could take an hour or two. So many times the fireworks thing is moved to later in the night when everybody's home or the following weekend. So prepare yourself for the occasional rude 6 a.m. wake-up call. Anyway, Eddie's fiancée, Claudia, she didn't send him to the doghouse because he forgot her birthday. Man, that could be the end of a relationship. I'm not kidding. Better to have that date tattooed on your forehead than to risk the wrath of your female Latin partner. Now, ladies, gringas, if you forget your Latin guy's birthday, not to worry, that's generally a night out with the boys at the strip clubs. Not always, but believe me, that's usually the plan. So how did Eddie end up in the doghouse? Well, it's because he happened to have scheduled a meeting, an appointment on that day, on Claudia's birthday. Yep, that's considered a breach of birthday etiquette here in Latin America, too. The tradition is you two must keep the whole day free for whatever your better half wants to do. So keep that in mind, too. In fact, Eddie said he learned about the birthday thing the hard way when he had first opened up a restaurant or two, and his workers would either ask for the day off or call in sick. He said that got to be so annoyingly predictable that for a while, when he'd interview people, he'd ask them if they were willing to work on their birthday, and they always said yes, you know, to get the job, but they were lying. When you get boots on the ground yourself, you'll see what I mean. All right, speaking of boots on the ground, there's still time to sign up for my July Expat Insider Seminar. This show is going out on June 18th, so you've got about 3 weeks to put it together. In fact, that's plenty of time. I've had people sign up the very day before the event. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and you'll also get some information there on those great John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. If you're coming all the way down to Central America, you'd be selling yourself short if you didn't add an extra 3 or 4 days onto the beginning or the end of your trip to do one of those John Galt excursions. Now, if you just can't swing coming down to the seminar or getting boots on the ground yet, do the very next best thing, that is, sign up for my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. Be sure to go there to get my 3 free introductory videos to my 9-hour course. And remember, if you need any individual help on the way, go to www.thenewexpat.com and download my phone questionnaire. You can use that as a guide if you want to do a one-on-one phone consultation with me. Many people do, and it's free if you come to one of my seminars. Now, you longtime listeners might remember good old Captain Mango. He came down, I think, to my second or third seminar, and he's been here ever since. Yes, he's a favorite friend and good old boy from that mythical, magical place called Cleveland. I'm not kidding, he's from Cleveland. Or at least a short tuk-tuk or chicken bus ride away. Anyway, if we haven't heard from good old Captain Mango in a while, it's my fault because he sends me occasional little blurb and, well, I'm getting to it today, okay? So now this from Captain Mango. He says, Johnny, a while back I had a visitor, Peter, from New York City. I had asked him when he got back to New York, would he please send some whole bean coffee back to Cleveland for me? Of course, I gave him the coffee here in Guatemala. He was so kind as to purchase a grinder from Walmart and send that along with the beans to Cleveland. Well, my friend's mother in Cleveland asked when the coffee arrived, why did he send decaf? Well, I was stunned. Can't believe it. No way. Switch the coffee I sent with some phony decaf BS. Why would he do that? Then, months later, I sent another batch of excellent coffee from Guatemala to Cleveland via another house guest I had visiting, James. Once again, the word came from Cleveland. Captain Mango, why more decaf? Why are you sending me decaf? Well, she claimed two of the three bags were indeed decaf, and I said, hell no! James switched coffee on me too? What's with these guys? Why didn't they just buy their own when they were down here instead of taking mine and switching it? Then I thought, you know what? I've never even seen whole bean decaf coffee down here in Central America, though it might exist, I guess. Anyway, I'd sent various types of Leon, that's the brand name here, coffee, one bag of Antigua / Coban blend, and one bag of Frijanes, and one bag of Espresso. All of them whole bean coffee. That's the way to go. Never ground. That you do yourself the moment you're going to make your coffee. Anyway, let it be known, Johnny, that I would never, ever send decaf to anyone. That'd be like switching Tang for fresh squeezed orange juice. I mean, come on, what an insult. Anyway, so last night, my Cleveland friend happened to be on her mother's home phone while I was on the phone with her. I asked, what's it that makes you think that coffee I sent was decaffeinated? She replied, well, Captain, it says right here on the package, decaf. I thought for a moment and asked her to spell it for me. She replied, D-E-C-A-F-E. I said, wait a minute. Wait just a minute. Is there a space between the E and the C? She said, why, yes. And I politely explained that the label is in Spanish and decafé is Spanish for the coffee. That in no way means I sent you that weak and inferior coffee substitute known as decaf. So now I'm feeling sorry I ever doubted my two good friends, Peter and James. Again, sorry guys. Sincerely, Captain Mango. It's me, Johnny, again. By the way, Captain Mango is one of those guys who's got a green thumb. Unfortunately, I don't. He knows all about soil and planting, and I'm talking about legitimate plants now. Because that's the business he was in back in Cleveland. Greenhouses, flowers, and sprouts. Again, I believe it was all legal. Anyway, because he landed down here, smack dab, in the middle of some of the greatest coffee country in the world, he's now doing some work in coffee fields himself. And being that he really knows about plants and soils, all you guys and gals coming down to my expat insider seminars who've been thinking about possibly doing the coffee plantation your thing or getting into the coffee biz, well, the captain will be hanging with us at the seminars as usual. And if you have any questions at all about coffee or planting or agriculture, anything plant or crop related, he's a great source for that kind of info. And if he doesn't know it, he'll find out for you. By the way, speaking of Captain Mango, a while back, I did a little bit on the show talking about Uber. You know, the transportation app guys who've been in the news a lot lately. Lots of controversy, either love them or hate them. Now, if you remember a few shows ago, I was saying a few positive things about them. Like, for example, I like the way they stick it in the face of government. Because, you know, by nature, a business that runs off the net like that is very difficult to tax and regulate. Anyway, that little bit really set off Captain Mango, and here's what he wrote back. So let's give him equal time. He says, Johnny, as Captain Mango, I had officially retired, but when I heard your blatantly slanted ravings about Uber, I just had to get in uniform again and pull rank on you. Yes, Uber, whom I consider evil, immoral, iniquitous, nefarious, rotten, sinful, bad, unlawful, unrighteous, unsavory, vicious, vile, villainous, wicked, and wrong. Yep, that's Huber. Now, I know Captain Mango means that in a most heartfelt, Christian sort of way. Don't you, Cap? Anyway, the captain says, I feel, Johnny, that I need to respond to this blatant bit of misinformation you spew. Uber touts itself as a communication app, not a transportation business. Their drivers are not professional, especially in Latin America. For example, in Guatemala. The company nor the drivers do not pay any of the regulatory fees that normal taxis are required to pay. Yes, I understand about being anti-government, but at some point, it is necessary. There are four different government agencies that have the ability to shut down a taxi in Guatemala City alone. Can you believe that 14,000 taxis operate within these rules? And these taxi operators are dedicated to their trade. Not to mention all of the affiliated businesses that thrive on the maintenance and repair of said vehicles. Now, along comes Uber with a deal that seems too good to be true. And you know what they say about that, right? The system is designed to make a few cats rich in Silicon Valley, while exploiting the poor with a rate that barely covers fuel and will not sustain maintenance costs and vehicle depreciation either. This makes it a flash in the pan that will burn out eventually when Uber vehicle drivers find themselves unable to afford to repair or replace their failing heaps. Similar to economic exploitations that are to milk wealth from the usual unsuspecting poor, then the captain says, the Uber scam will only put many hardworking, dedicated taxi pilots out of the business until the pool of Uber suckers runs dry. This has a potential to leave a transportation void that will seriously hurt an emerging economy. For you to take the pro-Uber position, Johnny, without first looking into the facts, I find blatantly misleading and irresponsible. I could go on about this ad nauseum, but I'll conclude with the fact that already a motion has been filed here in Guatemala to ban Uber, as it has been banned in 58 countries already. As ever, your kind of pissed off and disappointed friend, Captain Mango. Captain, I never heard you so, well, pissed. So when he wrote that to me not so long ago, I wrote this reply. I said, Captain, I know legitimate taxi businesses have to bend over to the worthless government slugs, and Uber doesn't have to, which is totally unfair. But life ain't fair. I personally have never used Uber, but I hate government. I think everyone should have all the choices available, even Uber. And if they suck, then they will die a fitting death. And if I suck, well, so will I. By the way, that goes for Airbnbs too, and Bitcoin, which also gives the finger to government asswipes and banksters. Even Trump. From the very beginning, I knew he'd never get the train back on the tracks. He'll never get anything done. But you know, I wanted to see him get elected because it was like throwing a stick of dynamite into a rat's nest. Quoting the Lizard King, no one here gets out alive. So soon enough, we'll see how all this plays out. Meanwhile, we'll close with this brain-scratching email from our friend the Altiplano Drifter. Johnny, where does all the garbage and sewage go for all the villages around the most beautiful lake in the world? Lake Atitlan. Short question, long answer. Here goes. Well, first let me say if you live in a nice, gated, guarded community, normally you'll have a septic system. Yeah, septic systems are big with single-family housing here in Latin America. And you'll find that even in most large Latin cities, there's no communal septic or sewer system. Now, that sounds strangely unsanitary, doesn't it? Well, you know, in the good old days back in the USA, before the 1950s, almost everyone had septic systems. Everyone who lived the ways out of the city or in the boonies. You might remember seeing those big torpedo-like tanks out in people's backyards. Of course, in U.S. cities, everyone's connected to municipal sewer. However, in Latin cities, that's often not the case. So, homes and businesses either have a septic system or they dump right into the nearest lake or river. Yuck. So often, the lower middle class and very poor Latins dump directly into the nearest body of water. Why? Because they haven't got the $500 to put in a septic system. So as far as Lake Atitlan, the first or second most beautiful lake in the world, the 12 little indigenous towns around that lake are dumping right into the water. Meanwhile, registered businesses, upscale homes, restaurants, hotels, etc., and any and all new construction must provide their own sewage treatment facilities or they won't be able to operate or get a building permit. However, there are no such rules for the vast majority of people living around the lake, that's the lower middle class and poor, who've been dumping their crap and their wastewater in the lake forever. Meanwhile, in the past 5 years or so, the do-gooders have arrived, da-da-da-da, with their high-tech sewage treatment devices and contraptions. In fact, maybe a year and a half ago, I was at the lake and I saw 10 or 12 little floating sewage treatment platforms just pumping away, looking like they were actually doing something. I read somewhere that they were donated by the Israeli government. And 6 months later, every one of them was down for some reason, broken or out of commission. Yep, it's the same old, same old. That's the do-gooder, feel-good life cycle in a nutshell. Yep, so very predictable. However, the good news is, as new structures get built and old ones get remodeled, people realize, and they're even teaching this in the local schools, that it's not good to dump your stuff directly into the lake. And the bad news, almost all towns and cities in Latin America have started big sewage treatment projects. Wait a minute, what could be bad about that? Well, again, they start out great guns, big announcements in the papers and such, and after a few years, they're broken and abandoned. But why when something like that's so important? Well, that's because, as usual, the government puss bags at the top who put out the contracts skim a bit for themselves and then hand them out to their friends and brother-in-laws and such who don't know anything about sewage treatment, but they set up a corporation, which in turn hires a real sewage treatment corporation to do the work. Of course, half the money's been skimmed or disappeared, and there's never enough to complete or maintain the project after it's been built. Now, the perfect example is the past vice president of Guatemala, the first woman vice president, Roxanne Baldetti. By the way, she's in jail now. Turns out she let out a contract to an Italian firm that was supposed to clean up another big lake in Guatemala, Lake Amatitlan. Well, they dumped some chemicals into the lake. Nothing happened. $2 million disappeared, and the Italian company doesn't seem to exist anymore. Yes, it's true. All lakes and rivers in Latin America are polluted to various degrees. And you know, a friend of mine from Colombia, who's an expert in the sewage treatment plants, he told me the reason why Lake Atitlan is not dead and it's not in terrible shape is because there are no smokestacks or medium, even small industries around the lake. It's just people, towns, tourism, and basically indigenous people. In fact, this Colombian friend, he's an architect, he says, think of Europe and the United States back in the 1960s. Most lakes and rivers were polluted. That's the state of things here in Latin America now. But up in the States, the people got educated, whereas down here, the people remain stupid. Like one of my old fallen Catholic buddies always says, he says, Johnny, there may not be a God, but there certainly is a devil.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.